Welcome to the 2041 Project Podcast, Season 2, the podcast digging into the dark beating heart of the matter. I'm your intrepid host, Hiro Contrejas. Today's episode, Neve Kim and the Great Eastern Seawall Project. The 2041 Project is a podcast of the Public Service Radio at the SUNY Oneonta Laboratory for New Journalism, in accordance with the Digital Media Authenticity Act of 2038. The podcast is being recorded on April 12th, and the province token is... Nadej Moon interviewed Neve Kim during last year's placement day, just after she found out she had been given her chosen National Service Year assignment, the Eastern Seawall. All around the world, coastal countries are scrambling to build seawalls, if they can afford it. The United States has a lot of coast to protect, and it's the Bi-Coastal Seawall Authority's job to design, build, and maintain one of the largest concrete structures in the world. Their motto is, leave no land behind. In spite of the slogan, much land has already been lost, and more will be. Some coastal communities have survived behind the seawall, or have undertaken massive and temporary projects to rebuild beaches and dunes. And the Reforest Service is set to announce a major initiative at replanting coastal mangroves. But the list of beach towns that have been lost to the sea gets longer every year. Right now, there are 50,000 National Service Year volunteers assigned to BSA projects on the Pacific and Atlantic coasts. They're in a race against time, against a tide that's rising faster than anyone predicted. Today, we are going to talk to one of these volunteers about the fight against sea level rise.
Hi, I'm Neve Kim, and I'm doing my National Service Year on the Atlantic City sector of the Eastern Seawall.
And you're a graduate of SUNY Oneonta?
Yep, 2041, Hydrology and Civil Engineering.
I've never seen the seawall up so close. Is there a good vantage point to take in the view?
Sure, follow me. You're not afraid of heights, are you? So I'm curious. Nadej was here just a few weeks ago. Was there something wrong with my interview?
No, not at all. The truth is, Nadej went offline a few days ago, and we haven't heard from her.
Oh my god.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. She has all her interview material with her, so I'm trying to redo everything quickly in case...
In case you can't find her? Oh, that sounds bad.
I wouldn't worry too much. Nadej has dropped off before, so it's probably nothing. I'm sorry to make you do this interview again.
That's okay. I'll try to keep my answers fresh. Well, anyway, here we are. I like to come up here when I'm not on duty. It's my favorite place.
Is it always this windy?
Pretty much.
I'll try to describe what I'm seeing. I'm standing on a guardrail now, and below me the concrete wall stretches for what it feels like a long, long way down. It doesn't go straight down, it curves out towards the sea. At the bottom of the wall, there are a lot of hexagonal pillars of different heights. The waves crash against them with the force I can feel all the way up here. If I walk over to the other railing, I'm overlooking the city. Just waking up for a busy day, people getting to their business while this giant wall keeps out the water out.
We call that riprap.
Riprap?
It's what they call piles of random blocks used as either seawalls or to line the seawalls. They disperse the energy of the waves.
Right. Okay, riprap.
This section of the seawall is the first to use the hexagonal design. They're based on the Giant's Causeway in Ireland.
Never heard of that.
It's really amazing. Looks like it must be man-made, but it's totally natural. Researchers modeled the fluid dynamics of the Giant's Causeway and found it distributed wave energy better than the randomized riprap.
It looks pretty cool, that's for sure. And this wall is a lot higher than I thought it would be.
Most people say that when they see it for the first time. We're not building it for the sea levels of today, but for the future.
Build it right for the first time.
Totally. You know, when a hurricane hits, you'd get wet from the waves where you're standing.
Whoa, that's crazy. So what is your job on the wall?
It changes all the time. We live, eat, and work together in comm house groups. We get new assignments every week or so. Recently, we've been repainting a lot of the safety railings, like these, on the observation decks and the emergency jetties.
Emergency jetties?
Oh yeah. Take a look down there. You see that?
I hadn't noticed them before, but now I see them. Every couple hundred meters, there's a concrete jetty with a red railing and a red door with a green light above it. What are they for?
That's another reason I wanted to bring you up here. Look over there. Do you see that boat?
Wait, where?
Come close and follow my arm.
Oh yeah, I see it. It looks rusty.
It's a refugee ship. People use whatever they can get.
It's pretty small.
Yeah, but it could have come from the Caribbean or even Africa. We've had ships come from as far as Bangladesh.
That's crazy. They're heading for the doors.
Yeah, exactly. If they can get to the door, they can live.
The boat comes in a lot quicker than I thought it would. As it gets closer, I can see it more clearly. The deck is crowded with people. It's getting tossed in the waves and everyone is holding on. The refugees are panicking, shouting, and one person is holding up a baby.
They're afraid of being turned back.
Does that happen?
Not anymore, but for a while it was really bad. They still sometimes panic when they get this close to their destination.
When the Coast Guard boat gets near, the people on the deck lunge and the boat pitches dangerously. A few people fall or jump into the water. Jesus, are they jumping in?
Yeah. Some of them think it's the fastest way to get rescued.
That sounds like a dangerous gamble.
They're really desperate. Sometimes they try to swim to the jetties, too.
Oh, are those sharks?
What? Oh, no, those are dolphins. They're always around during rescues. Sometimes they help.
Really? You've seen that?
No, not myself. I'd love to see that, though.
Oh, come on, dolphins, do something. The saga continues for another hour. The Coast Guard get most of the refugees and crew off the boat and pluck out some of the people in the water. We watch a few others swim to the jetty, where double R volunteers wearing orange jumpsuits pull them in. I watch one man lying on his back, gasping for air, and I think, smiling. Do you think everyone made it?
Probably not.
Really?
Bodies wash up all the time.
That's terrible. I mean, you hear about refugees all the time, but...
But it's different when you see it?
Yeah. So you come up here to watch these things happen?
The first time, it was just for the view. But then I saw an old wooden fishing boat smash up against the riprap, and everyone was lost. We don't even know how many people... That changed everything for me. Made my work on the wall both more urgent and meaningless at the same time, you know? The thing that protects us from the ocean is also a deadly impediment to the refugees.
Walls always have two sides, right?
Yeah. I couldn't unsee that, and I'm not sure why, but I needed to see more. Like I had to bear witness or something. Like I'd always be wondering if someone was drowning on the other side of the wall. I got some of the volunteers from the comm houses to start doing watches up here, even though the BSA and Coast Guard catch just about everything with remote monitoring. But for me, it's not enough. So I'm putting in a transfer to be on one of the double R shore crews. I just can't watch from up here and not do anything. Here we are.
Neve invited me to have dinner with her comm house. I really wasn't into the idea. I mean, I just watched people drown. But I could imagine Nadezh nagging me on in my mind. The story needs this. The calm house was a little bungalow on the bayside. The bay's water levels are controlled now by the Corps of Geoengineers, and so the bay shore needed minimal seawall. More of an earthen dike with a pedestrian path on top of it. I learned a lot about this community during dinner. It was a historically Black neighborhood, and somehow it managed to survive flooding, gentrification, and a million other challenges, and still had some of its original working class character. Most calm houses are individually owned by local people who get paid by the BSA to house and feed volunteers. Neve's calm house was owned by an elderly African-American woman they called Mother Efua. She fled to Atlantic City as a refugee too, from the Outer Banks, after the storms and rising seas engulfed her hometown. After dinner, Neve walked me out onto the porch, and we sat for a while before I had to head to the aerodrome. Thanks for sharing your story with us, Neve, for the second time.
It's no problem. It's nice to have someone to talk to other than my cohort. I'm sorry if I sounded cynical about the seawall project. It is really important. There are people's homes to protect, like Mother Efua. I don't want her to be a refugee twice in one lifetime. But I just need to be closer to those most in need right now, I guess. We all have a role to play, right?
I guess so.
You don't seem so sure.
I'm sorry. I know other people do. I just don't see how I fit in. It's a leap of faith, building something like this. And faith is something I'm all out of.
Well, if I can figure out my place, I bet you can figure out yours too.
Yeah, maybe.
You know, that reminds me of something Nadezh said. I just remembered. Maybe it means something.
Oh.
She came for the calm house dinner, just like you, and then she got a call.
She took a call during dinner?
Yeah. Is that weird?
No, it's just Nadezh was pretty zealous about keeping her device away from meals.
Weird. Well, she got a call and came out here to the porch for a while, and then when she came in, she was kind of different. Quieter. A little less tuned into the conversation. We were talking about... the Half-Earth movement, which people love to argue about. And Nadezh asked all of a sudden, what if we knew why we were here? And we all kind of stopped, and it got really quiet. And then she said, I mean, don't you ever wonder why evolution led to a species whose hallmark feature was our ability to comprehend and intentionally reshape the natural order?
This is Hiro Contrejas, Audiolog 2-5. I'm sitting in an ancient cliff dwelling with a little campfire next to me. The moon is rising over the high desert, and the air smells like pine and creosote. How do holograms smell like anything? Behind me, ancient drawings on the cliff walls flicker in the firelight. Stylized people, spirals, animals, and creatures I can't identify. In the next cliff opening, I can see a group of Native Americans singing and drumming around their own fire. I slept for a while, finally. Best sleep in a long time. The porthole is closed, so the illusion is unbroken, except for the glowing control panel, which seems to float in midair next to me. I keep replaying Nadezh's weird question about the purpose of people and the intent of evolution, and imagining my answer. Evolution has no intent, Nadezh. That's the point. Why are you asking that question? You were always the closed book. I always thought that was holding you back. You never allowed yourself to be part of the story. We had so many arguments about that.
Hiro?
What the fuck?
I'm sorry to interrupt your simulation, but we need to talk.
Thank you.
The 2041 podcast is a production of the A.J. Reed Science Discovery Center of SUNY Oneonta. Rosie Baez played Hero, Kylie Fetka played Neve Kim, and Deanna Prekpalai played the Airship AI. Music and sound design by Andres Ballin's Fall 2021 Audio 4 class. Written by Doug Riley. Next week, interview with the AI.